Well, as President Obama visits Saudi Arabia, tens of thousands of Russian troops have massed on the Russian border with Ukraine. And there are fears in the White House that an invasion could be imminent. We've talked about what this has done to U.S.-Russian relations, but what is it doing aboard the International Space Station, where American astronauts and Russian cosmonauts are living and working together every day? Joining us from Washington is Howard McCurdy, a professor at American University and an expert on space policy. Professor, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Well, what are you hearing about what effect Russia's actions might have on cooperation aboard the space station?
It could be very difficult. The Russians and the United States, along with the other international partners, are pretty much joined at the hip. This is, to use another analogy, it's a marriage, and if it goes sour, it would be as bad as a bad divorce case.
Is there any indication that it is going sour?
It depends on the extent to which Russia intervenes further in the Ukraine and then the reaction of the Obama administration. The reason that we cooperate with the Russians on the space station is because of arms control. A lot of people think it's for science. In fact, it was for arms control back in the early 1990s. The exchange was that we would give work to Soviet engineers who were becoming Russian engineers in exchange for cooperation in denuclearizing countries like the Ukraine. And so the arms control work continues. The International Space Station science work continues. But you could get to a point where if the Russians engage in behavior, that we might decide to withdraw from the project in some fashion.
And of course, until recently, we had our own ferry system to get people up to the space station or to anywhere in space on the shuttle, and now we don't have that anymore.
We don't have an immediate system for getting up to the space shuttle, but we have five options, one Chinese, four Americans, that could come online fairly quickly if we had to have access to the space station. I'm more concerned with the operation of the space station in the interim. That could be the real challenge.
Well, let's talk about the space station. First of all, it's not that big. It does have separate toilets and air conditioning units, I read, for the Americans and the Russians.
Yeah, I've likened it to a divorce couple trying to live together in the same house because they can't afford separate quarters. So you could think of it this way. They've got their own bathrooms, but they don't have their own furnace and air conditioning system.
And do they interact much?
Well, they interact in this sense. One of the astronauts is the commander. So that raises the very first question. Who's in charge of the kids? Who's in charge of the cosmonauts and the astronauts? Who's going to give the commands? So that's one of the first issues that would arise.
And somebody has to pay for it, and the U.S. pays for the bulk of the space station's operations, right?
That's right. And in addition to that, the Russians provide parts for the vehicles that we would want to use if we wanted exclusive access to the space station. There's all kinds of interconnections. And the reason that the interconnections are there is to make the Russians part of the European-American community and not have them behave like they behaved in the 1950s and 1960s when it was the Soviet Union and the Cold War. So taking apart that relationship is both politically challenging and technically challenging.
But we should say that both sides are keeping the rhetoric down right now. Charlie Bolden, the head of NASA, has said that as of now, things are still moving forward. They've been cooperating for years up there, and it doesn't seem to be a problem right now.
As of now, things are moving forward, and cooperation at the flight level is much easier than cooperation at the diplomatic level. The astronauts and the cosmonauts get along, in other words.
Cooperation is all well and good, but in a situation like this, of course, you'd want the U.S. to have its own capabilities without having to rely on another country that it's sometimes not too friendly with.
The U.S. will have its own capabilities. The difficulty, the challenge was that there would be a gap between the closing of the shuttle flights, which was a good decision. We couldn't keep flying that until 2020. There'll be a gap between that and the time at which our own commercial vehicles come online. And so it's a short period of time, and the difficulties have now incurred themselves during this period of time, which was the worst scenario, but people anticipated it, and they realized that there was a low probability that cooperation might collapse, but that was better than taking the risk of flying the shuttle for an infinite period of time.
But why do we have the gap?
We have the gap because Admiral Gaiman, who was the chair of the Columbia Accident Investigation Board, said to NASA people, and they agreed, you've got to set some date. that will be the conclusion for the space shuttle. And then in the interim, NASA and the commercial space industry can try to develop rocket replacements, which they are doing. SpaceX has a successful cargo carrier that gets to the International Space Station, but they don't have a crew vehicle capability yet. But they're working on that, and it could come online fairly quickly. Some people say 2 years if we had to press ahead more rapidly.
But ideally, you would have wanted to have all of that, the replacement, ready by the time you retired the shuttle.
In an ideal world, you would have wanted to have a smooth transition, but we counted on the Russian Soyuz vehicles to not only provide transit for astronauts and cosmonauts to and from the station, but also for reboost capability. You know, this is it's a big structure in terms of atmospheric drag. There's not much atmosphere up there, but you get down around 200 miles, and it's enough to slow the space station down. So it has to be reboosted periodically higher into orbit. To do that, you need a Russian vehicle. Now, you could build a U.S. vehicle, but that would take time.
Do you think that all of this will have any impact on NASA's budget?
I don't think it'll have any impact on NASA's budget unless we declare an emergency and start to spend extensive amounts of money to bring one of our U.S. carriers online more quickly. NASA's working very hard on its commercial relationships and public-private partnerships with the space industry, the entrepreneurial space industry, to develop capabilities of getting humans from the Earth to low Earth orbit. And I don't, it could speed up a little bit, but I think the purpose of that is not to spend a great deal of money, because then you don't have any money left over to do the missions.
Howard McCurdy is an expert on space policies, professor at American University in Washington, D.C. Mr. McCurdy, thanks so much for joining us.
Glad to help.